Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 71, Deborah Conrad. Most everybody recognizes that name of Deborah Conrad. She's been around quite a while. Not old. I don't want to say that. But she has a podcast called Thrifting for Profit. And she said she's been in and out because it is hard. It does get old after a while. And she has used it to kind of chronicle her journey, of course, which started out in eBay and thrifting and that kind of thing. And now she's a pretty heavy Amazon seller and a coach. And we spent some time talking about it. And I think what's really interesting is the longevity. She has figured out a system that works for her. And I just appreciate that because not everything works for everyone, and it shouldn't. That's the beauty of it. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, and tonight's guest, you know, she is seasoned, not old. She is experienced, not old. I don't know how to say that. But she has crushed me with her podcast because it is – I remember listening to it 3 years ago. I mean, she's been around for a long time in the e-commerce world and has just done a fabulous job and really has grown her business. I'm really excited to talk with Deborah Conrad. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, how are you?
I am wonderful. See, I didn't call you old.
Not old.
I didn't call you old. Well, no, because, you know, it's funny. In this world, 3 years can make us old. Isn't it funny?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, think back, you know, it's talking to people, you know, I guess I was talking to Jason Smith and we were talking about selling on eBay. I mean, just imagine, I can't imagine what it was like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I just can't remember how complicated and how hard it was, because I think you take it for granted today how simple that stuff is.
Oh, things have changed so much since I was when I was selling on eBay years and years ago, and that was like that was the only place you could sell. That was it. Yeah. If you wanted to sell online and be in front of customers' eyeballs, it was eBay, and you had to figure it out. And it was not. It's so much easier. All these channels, so much easier. The barrier to entry is just completely dissolved.
It's almost non-existent. You know, I mean, there's another app out there called OfferUp, right? I mean, literally, you take a picture, you answer about, I don't know if there's two questions you even answer, and that's it. Boom, and it's up. And it's like, wow. You know, and you get notified in your market, hey, you know, this couch is for sale or what have you, you know?
There you go.
I'm just amazing. Okay, so let's go back. You have been selling for a long time. You've been selling on eBay, now, of course, on Amazon. But, you know, how did you get started? I mean, were you an entrepreneur from day one? I mean, is that what you did? You got at school and said, hey, I want to go sell?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think I wanted to because I come from an entrepreneurial, you know, background. My family everybody was entrepreneurs. My mom and dad, my grandparent, all my grandparents, nobody had a job. And so I didn't know what it was like. I didn't know anybody who had a job, really, when I was little. I didn't know that. And so I think probably my DNA said you should be an entrepreneur. But my mom and dad said, oh, no, you're going to go to college and you're going to get a real job. And that was it. That was the end of the story. So, and, you know, when they're paying the bills, well, okay.
Do you think they would say that today, now knowing, you know, knowing what the world has changed to? Do you think that, I mean, you know, do you get what I'm going? Is, I guess back then there really wasn't there was an option because they were doing it.
Right.
And they must have seen the ugly side of it, the long hours. And let's face it, they couldn't have sold online back then, right? So
right.
It would have had to been face-to-face and, you know, opening up 6 days a week or 7 days a week, depending on how, you know. So maybe, you know, would they say that again today, do you think?
They were, my mom wasn't, she was just proud no matter what, you know, how moms are. She just. Whatever. But my dad was very opinionated and he was very proud of before he passed away. I was not selling online, but I'd had my own business, doing several different kinds of things, but doing my own business, doing what was using my talents, and was very proud and didn't really acknowledged that to me so much, but told other people who told it to me, which is his way of patting me on the back, you know, telling other people how proud he is of you and how much he, you know, thinks it was so awesome that you did this, although he would never admit that he didn't encourage me to go that direction. So, you know, your internal light will lead you eventually in the right direction. Mm.
Ooh, I like that. Your eternal light. Ooh, we're getting deep here.
Oh, yeah, so, wait, well, don't think that that's going to be the whole, because I'm not all that.
Well, that was pretty good. I mean, that was a pretty good start. But what is your talent? You just mentioned that, you know, he was glad to see you using your talent. What's your talent?
Well,
you know it, so I'm interested to hear it because I want to, you know, I want to see if I can figure mine out.
I was always very artistic. I'm not an Picasso or, you know, I'm not a fine artist, extremely fine artist, but I was very artistic and creative my entire life, and it was encouraged to develop that, not for a career, but just to use those talents, because my everybody in my family had things that they liked to do with their hands and creative things and think about things, and so that was just kind of the thing that we all did, something. And so I became a decorative artist eventually. And when I went to when I graduated from high school, I actually had scholarships to go into the art field, and that of course were not used because that was not
course.
Artists are starving, you know.
All right.
So
not anymore, but they were.
They were very starved, much so. And so I was encouraged to go into business, but eventually it wound around and came back to the decorative arts. And at that time, there was a time, and there still is, but there was a big flourish, a big push for things painting in people's homes, and people were painting their own homes with all kinds of finishes on their walls. It started out with like a sponge painting, and then it was all these different finishes and things that look like marble and things that look like bricks and things that look like granite and, you know, all those kinds of things. And murals, people wanted murals in their kitchens, and people wanted, and it was in all the magazines, you know, that kind of thing. And I knew I could figure out how to do that. So I bought, you know, in my own way, that's how I learned how to do things. I bought, because there was no internet, and I bought books and paints and brushes, and, you know, within 2 weeks I was an expert. I'm putting little hand quotes in the air, you know, and had, you know, printed up some business cards, expert, and passed them out and started getting business because nobody else in my area was doing that. So, and eventually I had a partner who worked with me, and she said the thing that she remembers most, she was just telling me this the other day because we don't paint anymore. But she said, she says, the thing I remember most about that was that you always told me that if we don't know how to do it, we'll figure it out because we're just that good.
Mm.
Because we're just, we're that kind of people. We just, if you don't know how to do it, you'll figure it out. And you'll make it work, and as long as the customer is very happy with the end results, and they write us a check, then you know it's all good, right?
So that's a second talent. Then what you're describing is that you can figure it out, and you're not intimidated by it. That's really a talent, because I think, you know, I think, you know, you got a couple of things going against you. First off, you're a woman, right? And that wouldn't have been encouraged, but in your house it was. And I love the fact that you're not intimidated by it, and oh, it's not a man's world. You could do it, and it's not going to intimidate you. And I think that's a talent. That's not a maybe it's a skill too, but you need to be gifted with that. That's pretty strong.
That's kind of what I was just saying is kind of leadership speak. Leadership speak, meaning that I speak as often in a leadership from a leadership position, even if I'm not, that's usually means you're opinionated, but that I also have the ability to get my point across, which puts you into a percentage of the population that can be a leader or a teacher, which of course, as you know, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is not only do I do the business, but I also share what I learn as much as possible. So,
and you coach. That's an authoritarian thing. You know, John Maxwell, you ever read any of John Maxwell, he talks about leadership. And he said, you know, the leader has to change, right? So, you know, we're going to a restaurant. If you're picking the restaurant, you're the leader. If you're the one who's driving, you're the leader. Right. And it changes. Right. It's not one person, right, saying, oh, we're going to do this, and I want you to turn this way, and I want you to do this. It won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so your point is that, you know, you rise up to that, and it sounds like you really have. And I still say that's a talent. So I think you are in an isolated percentage of the world. I have come to this conclusion. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. Is that people don't want to make a commitment. It's not that they don't mind doing things and they don't mind rising up to things, but they don't want the commitment. You're not afraid of commitment, are you?
Not afraid of commitment. No, I'm not afraid of committing to something and making what I would say in my personal life, I would say, giving it the college try, you know, giving it that I may not be, I give it a big push, but I'm not the longevity person. I'm not the person who says that I'm going to keep on, I'm just going to keep pounding it until it's, you know, a dead horse. If it looks like that horse is drying up, man, I'm switching gears. So, and that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur these days in a small business, is that we have the ability to evaluate, we have the ability to research so much, and we have the ability to change.
And you have the ability to try things, and if you don't like them, right? I'm sure there are lots of things you've tried and you don't like them. So, and that's, isn't that fun?
Yeah, it is fun.
To me, it
if
is.
You're as long as you're not betting the farm.
Yeah, right. You don't roll it all on seven. You don't make, as Dave Ramsey would call, fatal choices, right? Where it's all or nothing.
Don't go all in on anything.
Yeah, pass.
Don't go all in on anything. That's right.
Well, you've really have grown your business, and I'm really interested to hear about that. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, I really want to talk about how you transition from your background in retail marketing and doing a little bit of eBay in that. Now you have a full-scale business and coaching in that, and I'm really interested to hear about that. So let's take a quick break. All right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at end foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories, specifically shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. In this segment, we get pretty specific about her business and Amazon and kind of I do beat the horse a little bit more on the retail side, because she did have a retail business, a successful retail business. And I think she offers great perspective on that. And I think that that's valuable for those of us in the retail world, because it's definitely different. As she brings up, most retail stores don't have a social media plan and an online plan. The fact that she did, and the fact that she has figured that out, she can translate that over. And I think a lot of us, if we go back to what we know and bring it into this business, you'll just do that much better. So let's get into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Deborah Conrad. Yes, that Deborah Conrad, the famous podcaster. You're famous in some circles. I mean, hey. Now, you do a lot of speaking, because I've seen your name out there as, and you're on the the West Coast side of the world there. I've seen your name out there on some of the events out there. You've done a really great job, and I've really seemed to find a stride in what you're doing, and I always appreciate that because I know the effort that it takes to do this. I mean, it's enormous. People don't realize how much effort it takes, and you've been doing it for a long time.
You try to make it look easy. Is that what you're saying? I'm making it look easier than it is. No.
No, nothing's easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing
That's
my line.
That's right. There are brick walls everywhere.
So you went into retail management. Now, you had your own business at one point, but a brick and mortar.
I had a brick and mortar store, and I also was in, I spent about 10 years out of school doing the whole retail management thing, and then had my own brick and mortar store for a while. And
was the retail management before the brick and mortar or vice versa?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you were running other people's businesses.
Yeah, I did the J-O-B for about 10 years and worked for, you know, people, other people, and then had it, you know, hit the tipping point of saying, that's it, I'm just done. I'm done.
Well, let me ask a question about that. Okay, were you working for corporate America, big retail places?
Yep.
Okay, so you saw the good and the bad. And then you went out and started your own business. And I'm interested to know, did you try to corporatize your own business? Or did you say, I am doing absolutely nothing that corporate America told me to do. I want to do it this way.
I'm absolutely not anywhere near... Yeah, they
okay.
They are one of the big frustrations with working in a large corporations. What for me was their inability to seek or to see how what I perceived would be easy and quick changes, which of course now, looking back at now that I'm much more seasoned,
you're wiser.
Thank you. See that bigger businesses that changing is not. It seemed so simple as a younger person in your late 20s, early 30s. It seems like it should be so simple to say this makes no sense. Now I made some changes. I got some things, you know, like for instance, when I worked for a major retailer. And I live in southern Arizona, and we have it's hot, it's warm here all the time. Right now it's 85 degrees, right? So
it's 20 degrees. Yeah. Depressing.
And we have an influx of what they call the snowbirds all winter long, which means those people that live like in places where you live where it's 20 degrees come here because they want to wear shorts and sandals in February. Well, a lot of those ladies, I worked a lot of my time in departments that would be considered women's departments or women's accessories, clothing, jewelry, different things like that. And a lot of them wanted things that were white shoes and white purses. And, you know, for a long time and still today, retail is there's a month when you just stop, you put all your white shoes and your white bags away. And they didn't want tan. They didn't want off-white. They wanted white, and they asked for it on a daily basis. And I would talk to the buyers, be calling them up, talking to the buyers, and it was always a, we don't do that. We don't do that. We don't do that, right? Because big corporate, right? That's not what we do.
Are they making their decisions, because they're sitting in New York somewhere or someplace like that? And that's what
the
culture there doesn't want that.
Right. The numbers... don't show that. It's too hard to get things to change. How do we just send them, you know, the product mix that's just that at this time of year? And they finally got it to where they changed their tune enough where this corporation would bag up the white inventory and send it all to the stores in southern Arizona at the end of the season. And then instead of just clearancing it out to nothing, and then we would have that in stock, and it was a good move for them. It was not that costly because they had inner store transit. And so So, you know, changes like that, though, were an uphill battle. And
well, that's a sea change for an organization, right? Because they didn't buy that inventory, right? They're letting the vendor float the value, right? They didn't pay for it yet.
Right.
And to do what you're describing is they basically now they have to pay for dead inventory, what they would have, you know, called dead inventory in the past. That's a sea change. So you were able to influence. That's a big deal.
That was a very big – in the long run, it was a very big deal. To me, it was a – being young, it was just, well, pretty much what I said to myself was, well, finally, at least I can offer this to my customers. And that's about it. I was happy that I could make some change. Looking at it from a really big picture, now that I'm wiser, that's something that just is very difficult. It was a very, I didn't know how difficult and what I had made happen. And so that's it's frustrating though, because those kinds of changes should be so obvious to people who can look at analytics and can analyze things. It should be obvious.
But isn't that one of the reasons they're going out of business still?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some of those companies that have figured it out, but I'm sure some of the names that you worked for aren't in business.
Are gone. Yep. They are gone. So. Yeah.
And you saw that thinking back, right? I mean, again, I don't think we should downplay this. I know it sounds like, oh, big deal. They should just send their inventory. Companies do that all the time. They didn't do it back then.
Uh-uh.
And again, they don't pay for the inventory, right? The company gives them terms. Whoever makes the clothing, they bought the inventory. Mm-hmm. They send it to you. Eventually, you pay that bill. And you wait, and by then you sell it at full price and you keep marking it down until it goes down to nothing. You add it all together, you pay the bill, and you got a profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you're describing, again, is a sea change. And that was a big deal. Did you get that vibe, though? You know, I guess maybe you're going there, is that over time, these battles, it probably wore you out a little bit, right?
And you don't get any real recognition. There was no – that wasn't – not even my – you know, it was not like the corporate came down and said, wow,
yeah.
You've made a big difference in XYZ or something like that. There was big corporations didn't flow down to that level, in inner store level. And so you could be making what would be considered to me a pretty big change and not have anybody say, well, it was, you know, it was that Deborah Conrad that suggested it. We ought to talk to her more about what we can do, or, you know, it was none of that. So, unlike a small business or a one person show where that you can make those kinds of changes and see results so quickly that we can now, saying, wow, what if everybody's saying on Amazon, it's brown purses that are selling. What if I started carrying white purses for those people that live in the warmer Floridas, southern, Arizona, Texas, whatever? What if? Well, is that what they're looking for that they're not finding? I'm always looking for what are they looking for right now that they're not finding? You know, sort of like selling Christmas ornaments in July. No, I'm not going to sell hundreds of them like I can in December. But if very few people are offering them, should I be offering them?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this question, because I know I'm beating this horse, but it's so interesting to me, because I don't think we are able to talk about this with a lot of people. I don't think people understand. There are lots of people that were in that situation that you were in, meaning that they're working in retail, they're working for a big mega company, and let's face it, they're even bigger now, right? I mean, you think about the company that owns TJ Maxx and Ross, and you know, that's all the same, and they own another one too, right? They're massive companies. Their ability to change is probably still just as difficult, you know, and they're a little more electronic and stuff like that, but it's still pretty difficult. The distance between that retail rep and the CEO is enormous, lots of layers. What would you tell somebody? Now, you opened up a retail store. Would you suggest somebody open up a retail store, or would you suggest they go into e-commerce, but would you suggest they get out of that retail environment if it's unhealthy and if they're feeling like they're up against a wall because they have ideas and nobody's listening?
Wow, that's a tough question.
I know.
It is a
that's
very
what I
tough
wanted
question.
Because you're the one expert that I think could answer that. Would you go back into retail?
Never.
Okay, so that's a given. But would you
and
tell that person?
And I wouldn't even want to own my own store, even though I can see, because it's local, right? I can see mm-hmm. the possibilities locally, but if I had a brick and mortar store right now, every bit of my merchandise would be online as well. Mm. And they are, when I look at my local stores, they are so slow to understand that premise. And how do I get people to come to that store? There's so many things about selling in retail that don't translate to selling on e-commerce.
Oh, go ahead. Tell me some of those.
Well, the biggest is merchandise. There's not everything that you could sell in a brick and mortar store is going to translate to selling on Amazon, for one thing.
Sure.
It just isn't. I have merchandise that I have tried that is, if you walked into a store and touched it and could hold it in your hand, it would be something that, if that was the kind of thing you were looking for, that you would just be in awe of it. It would be that kind of thing that is just like, oh, this is just, it's so unusual. And the way they manufacture each thing is actually a little bit one of a kind. And just by the finishes they use. And this, it absolutely bombed on Amazon because it doesn't translate well. Pictures cannot, you just don't get it. And it's a brand name that people that are in that, going to be using that kind of product would eventually see that brand name in magazines or in their talking to other people. And yet it's still, because you couldn't see it and know that it was going to look exactly like that picture, it just doesn't translate. So there's a line in the sand that there are products that just don't translate. Also, one of the reasons that my brick and mortar store was very popular in my locale was that our customer service was beyond, you know, I had after 10 years of being in customer service in retail, I knew a lot about how to deal with customers and treat customers and brought that with me into that kind of managerial and teaching other people that work in the store on what you don't say to customers and how you get them to buy more and that kind of thing. And we also did things like specialized packaging, almost like a branding. So everything was, when we packaged it, no matter if you were buying it for yourself or buying it as a gift, it was gift wrapped practically. It was all the same. Didn't matter how big or small it was all in this kind of bag, this kind of tissue, this kind of bow, this kind of thing. And everybody in town got, you know, after several years, everybody in my location knew if that bag was sitting there for their birthday or under the Christmas tree or whatever, they knew what store it would come from. And you would hear things like, I'm so excited because I can see that there's a bag from my store name under the tree and I can't wait to see what it is, you know, and that kind of thing. And so, and people would buy things as party, prizes, winning prizes. And you would come into the store and you would buy, I need 5 prizes for this event, and everything is bagged so nobody could tell what it was, right? Everything is bagged so nobody can tell what it was, but they knew where it was from. And so it was one of those things, though, that can somewhat translate to Amazon, but not nearly as well.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. So it was, you knew that there was at least a standard when you saw that bag. There was a minimum. It wasn't, you know, dollar store thing. There was a quality to it, an essence to it. Yeah, maybe an essence would be the right word.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that would translate to Amazon unless you could have your own, you know, channel on Amazon, and it was your brand, and it always came in that box, and it always came shipped this way. And now you're talking about you would have to ship everything yourself, because trusting Amazon to ship it correctly is always up in the air, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's an issue, though. But, you know, in some ways it did translate, right? So if you give them their due, you know that if you're buying on an Amazon, first off, it's free shipping, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a Prime member, right? And so that's why people buy. The second thing is it's going to be shipped fast. Now, I agree with you. It's not necessarily going to be shipped well. That's a different issue, yep. And they have to deal with that. But it is going to be shipped fast. I mean, they have exceeded my expectations almost every single time. And I know over Christmas they didn't, but I don't think any of the companies, because, you know, we're all buyers, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody did. But – you know, so I think there is some ways that their secret sauce is that, and your secret sauce was that. So you wouldn't go back into retail no matter what. Is it the freedom issue for you? Is it the people issue? Is it the you know, the bureaucracy of government? What is it that you wouldn't want to do? Oh, you're wise, right?
Wise.
You're just wise. You're tired. I'm tired. That's my theory on stuff.
Tired.
I don't want
it. I'm too tired to deal with it, and so. It has to work. This, whatever I do has to work. And that's that bullheaded stubbornness. Yeah. It just has to work. And, but I see in groups, a lot, you know, I want to get out of the rat race. I want to be home more. I need to be home at more. Well, you might be home more if you start the e-commerce business, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be present.
You're not going to be talking. You're going to be sitting across the room. Get off that computer. No, I got to order these things.
Yeah.
I order.
It isn't necessarily that you're going to be present more in your family, any more in your family than you are right now, because you're going to work harder, longer hours and harder, pounding whatever pavement you have to pound to make it work versus what I miss about having a quote unquote job is getting up, getting dressed, going to work, coming home, and I don't have to think about it again until I get up the next time to go to work. And you just left it there. Even though I was in management, it was a position that I didn't bring my work home much. You know, it was salaried, so I did tend to work longer than 40 hours. I would stay there and I would get scheduling done or, you know, whatever needed to be done, deal with employee issues or whatever had to be done. But when I got in the car and came home, it wasn't the same. We talk about business. We have to schedule time that we're not talking about business now, because my husband and I are both in business, and so we have to schedule time now to not talk about business.
Do you think, though, now, because I love it, I love the excitement, is it a job for you now? So you had a job, you know what a job is, and you know what a rigorous job. Retail, I think, is rigorous. I think that, you know, you're on when you get in a store,
right?
You know, it's busy. It's very usually, yeah. I mean, you're busy and you just go and the day's over and you're like, oh, thank God I'm out of here. You're not like sitting behind a desk and just, you know, no. So has this become a job for you yet in the negative sense?
No.
Oh, good.
No, absolutely not. There's days when you just.
Right.
You just pound your head against the computer because something is just completely frustrating you. Amazon has done something just stupid with your inventory, or UPS has, you know, done something, or, you know, whatever it is. There are times when you have these, like I said, these little brick walls or these little frustrations, things that come up. You've got stuff that's selling well on Amazon, and then every single listing has somebody else and they've tanked the price and you're just like, what do I do now? But it's a challenge. It's never a, that's it, I'm done, which to me, that's the negative. The challenge is, what do I do to fix this? What do I do next? How do I it's a never give up. I'm never going to give up.
Well, you use that phrase hurdles, and I think it's a great visualization. Mm-hmm. Are the hurdles shorter now that you've been doing it longer? Do you think they get shorter? Like, I mean, they're still there, but they're more nuisance hurdles as opposed to when you first had that crisis. Oh my God, they lost my inventory.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Now it's like they lost more inventory. Yeah, big whoop. I'll get more.
Yeah. Sky is falling. That's what that we kind of the analogy is. If you're looking at that one thing as the sky is falling, you're looking at this in the wrong way. It's just one part of the whole mechanism of business, and it's just going to happen. That stuff's just going to happen. And you have to, it's very easy, and I try not to say that very often in that way, that that stuff's just going to happen. And it's very easy for those of us that have gotten past a certain level to not remember what it was like when we only had $1,000 worth of inventory on Amazon, and every sale, every piece of inventory was critical to the process of mm-hmm. us getting to the point where we want to be. And when you get bigger, more sales, the bigger you get, the less each piece of inventory is meaningful. It's more, you start looking at things in kind of bunches and and you start handing things off to other people too. if they've lost my inventory, I don't want to deal with it. You go figure it out.
that's a valid point. When you were in brick and mortar and you got bigger, did your problems get bigger? But you got more employees, you got bigger problems, right?
The
right.
More
insurance.
The more people you have to deal with. And everybody's personality is different, and so knowing how to deal with different people and to read the signs that this conversation is not going well, you know, that kind of thing is something that when we talk about we, meaning the masses, we talk about having in-house people working for us. And that's what that's like, and that it is having employees. That's what it was like when I had a store. And when I was in management, I had people that worked, I was responsible for. They worked for me. And how far do you go to keep them happy, and when do you cut it off and say, no, we got to cut this off. And so it's all a learning experience, and I don't know. There are certain things about the way I do business that I know that, and I very hard to explain. It's very hard to articulate, but that I know that I do things a certain way because of that background, which was years ago, and I know I revert back to that knowledge when I work with people, or the fact that I don't want to, you know, I'm avoiding. Having a lot of in-house help. I have some, but not, you know, I'm trying to out get stuff done by people that aren't right here with me.
Well, I think it's smart. Now, here's my premise. So you described how getting bigger in a brick and mortar and all that jazz is harder, right? The problems get bigger. Would you say the same thing about Amazon? The bigger that you get, are the problems getting bigger, or actually they're getting smaller? So here, let me make my point, right? So thinking about it this way, you know, as you pointed out perfectly, when you start out, every bit of inventory is critical to you. Mm-hmm. One return and you're like, oh my God, I lost money on that purchase group, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when you get 2% returns or 17% in my shoes, mm-hmm. I get returned, right? It's like, okay, you know, they'll go back out for sale. So the problems on the scale of things. Mm-hmm. So that was when I was trying to wonder if you would agree with that. So back when you were, because you had the experience in the brick and mortar and you're living proof to say, yeah, they do get bigger as you get bigger.
They do get
bigger.
So I'm wondering. And they do seem, it is, when we are working in this e-commerce business, we have different problems than you do when you have a brick and mortar store. But the solutions seem to be smoother. You're transitioning into some solutions that seem to be easier. And because a part of it is because I had a brick and mortar store when there was no internet. So completely different feel, right? There was no eBay. There was nothing. You were very isolated. And with our situation now, we are so not isolated, and the solution, you can ask, you can just find somebody that just knows you. We all have somebody that we know on Facebook that knows better than we do. What do you do about this situation? And you'll get 15 different answers, or you'll ask somebody specifically like I do. You know, I'll ask, because Charlene's been doing it for such a long time that there's usually she has the solution right at hand.
This is Charlene Anderson.
Charlene Anderson, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, what you're describing is networking.
Right.
And back when you were in retail, you know, where did you network? Your local chamber of commerce or your local retailers association, right? Or a newsletter you'd get, right? Or your vendors would try to do something, right?
And
it's so different.
And yet there was the same kind of thing happening with online sellers as I did there with when I had a brick and mortar store. I had competition in town. We had competition. We were not doing anything that was completely unique. So everybody struggles with competition with location and price erosion and product mix and all that kind of thing. And so we sold a lot of what, you know, nobody else was selling in our town, or we outdid our competition with our packaging and things like that. But I talked to them infrequently, but I did talk to them. Now, when I worked for retail, you know, big retail establishments, it was a big thing. We had to go out and do shopped the other stores.
Oh, okay. And secret shopper kind of thing.
We went in and we looked at what they were selling, things that were similar to what we were selling at, you know, say I was working for right now, let's see, if I was working for Target or Walmart, I would go into Toys R Us and see what everything that was the same toy, what they were selling for. And these days it appears that, excuse me, those bigger stores can adjust prices locally,
Wasn't an option.
It wasn't really a big, an option locally. It had to be, that information had to be shared with, you know, a corporate executive, and then they would make those kinds of adjustments if needed. But it appears now that a management level at a Walmart can change prices, or a Target or a Toys R Us or whatever. And I'm not saying that's a for sure thing, because I don't work for them, but just talking to managers of those stores infrequently, as I do, but sometimes I do, that's kind of the feeling I'm getting, is that they can adjust prices. Now, whether they adjust prices like Amazon does, you know, if Toys R Us has this toy for sale online at this price, Amazon is selling it for that price immediately.
Yeah, yeah. They are absolutely following each other. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a terrible thing, you know, especially for their business model, and you wonder why they struggle, right? Mm-hmm. Toys R Us's infrastructure is a little different than Amazon's, right? And so that's an issue. So tell me how now you have mainly an Amazon business in addition to your coaching, and that's a separate thing. But in your Amazon business, do you run it in any way like a retailer? Is that still in there? What percentage of your inventory is wholesale? And is any of it back to what is the style of stuff you used to sell in your retail store? I wonder if that carried forward for you because you were comfortable.
Let's see.
I know that's a bunch of questions.
Boy, that was
a whole bunch
of questions.
Yeah, it was.
So the style of store that I had does not translate well now.
Okay.
For those of you that are in my age range, which is over 55, you'll know what country clutter means. And that means that people decorated in this, what would be a country style, and we had dolls and gingham and geese and all this stuff, and it was kind of in that genre, so in that time frame, and that's what people wanted. You give them what they want, right? And that doesn't translate now. But overall, I would say that my main focus for my business is still in the gift. That was a what you would consider a gift store. And I would say that that would be my main focus, is in the gift arena on Amazon.
So that art thing comes back, right? That focus, that light, as you called it earlier. Mm-hmm. And it's shown in your store, and you have continued it forward. It's just the product mix, because country kitsch or whatever isn't popular anymore. It's now,
whatever.
Blah, blah, blah. Right. I don't know anything. Right. Ladro, right? Yeah. Or whatever, you know. And so, okay. All right. So there is a translation. I always wondered that, you know, would a retailer do well in an e-commerce environment if they can get adjusted to the technology side, if they can get past that, as we had already said, that barrier to entry has really gotten a lot easier now. You can translate that over. So I'm going to
somebody who had a brick and mortar store, especially if it was somebody that was currently or within recent time had a brick and mortar store, would find it very interesting to go, if they thought outside the box and not thought about just apples to apples, but considering apples to oranges, if that makes any sense, really get out of their own way. They actually have, because they have the reps, they have they have access to all these catalogs, they might translate very easily. It's a very difficult though when they start. There's also these brick walls that'll come up that if they don't, like I said, if they just don't think about it illogically, they and learn and really spend time learning, because you can't just buy from a wholesaler and double it like you can for a store.
Right.
You can't just keystone and say, that's what we're going to sell it for. So there's a lot of things that go into selling on Amazon, especially, but pretty much any e-commerce, that your prices will not translate the same. And so what will this product sell for on an e-commerce type website is completely different than what it will sell for in a storefront. Might be more, might be less.
You know, before we started the conversation, you and I had a little bit of an offline discussion, and you had mentioned that you love the finds, you know, that thrifting kind of thing. Does that come out in you still? I mean, can you get rid of that, or is it still there? Ryan Witeska said the same thing. He said, Steve, once in a while that thrifter just comes out of me.
Does.
I don't know how to get rid of it.
It comes out, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're in a thrift store. It's that, and I think all of us, especially that do the arbitrage, right, or even wholesale or whatever, you get that find where you say, oh, my goodness, that is just selling like crazy good, and look what I can buy it for. And you're just it's the same giddiness as you find when you go into a thrift store and find, you know, that Starbucks mug that nobody else can find anymore that sells for $150, and there it is sitting there for the $2 price tag, and or a book, right? So it's just that it's not scalable. And
right. You just can't get it out of your system, though. I hear it, and, you know, my son is always encouraged. He's like, oh, let's go here. I'm like, dude, I don't want to go there, because I'll buy something, and I don't need more stuff that I don't sell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have enough stuff I don't sell.
That's right.
Yeah.
We all have those piles.
Ryan calls it that corner,
yeah.
Or Steve Sawyer calls it the corner that nobody wants to talk about,
yeah.
Where you just stack your stuff, yeah. Right? So you clearly don't have a fear. You're not intimidated by this. So now you decided to start coaching. And, well, you started a podcast. You started coaching. Is it because, well, I want to ask you, why? Why are you coaching and why have a podcast?
The podcast actually started because when Beth and I were having conversations, we talked on Skype for endless hours. And this was the gal that was with me when I first started the call, the podcast. And it was endless hours of talking. And it was always about products, of course. And we would research and send links to each other. And we were still, you know, treading, you know, finding our way. What kinds of things sell right now for this holiday? Or what kinds of things should we, you know, add to this to create a bundle or whatever it was? And I kept saying things like, this is so good. This is so, the us talking together and coming up with solutions is so good. And at that time we were listening to Scam Power Radio, I think it was called. And it was Chris Green and Kat Simpson and Lisa Satora and Bob Wiley, I think. And then they quit having that podcast. And I said, and we were religious about it. We had to listen to that. I mean, it was like we listened to it live, you know. Mm. We were going to be there live.
You were diehard.
And
you
in
were,
the chat.
You were groupies.
Oh, man, we were groupies. And there was and you wanted to be able to ask the questions and do all that stuff. And so and at that time, there just weren't a lot of groups and there weren't a lot of podcasts like there is now. There wasn't the information overload. We were all just screaming for more info, more data, more whatever. What do we do about this? How do we think about that? All those kinds of things. And then they were quitting and Beth and I were just like, well, what are we going to do? So I said, we're just going to take over that slot and just do this. Right. And of course, there it is. That whole, there was never a question on how do we do it. It was like, we're just going to say we're going to do it and then figure it out.
Well, and you're now 3 years into it, and it's this habit, right? It is a habit. It really is.
You know, I had to do it on my own. I've taken a couple of hiatus where I didn't want to talk to myself anymore. You know, it's gone kind of through some evolutions. I tried to change it to different formats, and that didn't work. And so we're just back to basics, nothing fancy. If people want to listen to it, great. If they don't, they don't. It's purely now at this point a matter that once a week, for most part, once a week, I just feel like I have to talk to somebody and spit it out. You know how you can kind of, I'm pretty sure you know this feeling that there's having your own podcast, that there are things you just want to say and you don't want to type it all out. And you just need to say it out loud, whether there's three people that are going to be interested or 3,000 or 5,000 or how many ever. It just needs to come out.
And I love talking about this stuff.
And so that's kind of how it's boiled down to that. And I know that I'm in a position, and so is Charlene, and so are a lot of other people, but I know that for myself, it's important for me to remember that I am in a position of, I don't like to say authority, because I'm definitely, if you've listened to my podcast, you know I'm not an authority, but I am a leader. People look at to me as a leader.
An influencer.
And so we are very cautious about what we talk about. We don't talk about anything that we're not sure that we know the rules, right? If there's a rule, when we talk about something, there's a rule for like Amazon, then we talk about that rule or that terms of service or whatever it is, keeping people out of hot water, that kind of thing. And so that's just what keeps me going. And when I take breaks, like when I took one a year or so ago, and it was a while, I think I was almost 6 months off. I mean, people were just, I couldn't not do it anymore because I couldn't get them to shut up. You know, it was like, stop, you know, I would say, stop asking me about the podcast, guys. I'm not doing it anymore. Well, pretty soon there's just too many of them. And they just look forward to, you know, I mean, I don't have that many people that are on the live call, but they look forward to having that in their ear when they want it. And so, and there are.
That's very cool, though.
Right. But, and there are people who absolutely can't stand us. And that's fine. They don't like the rambling on and the conversation. They want it a lot more structured. And so, and there's podcasts out there now that are structured. So go for it.
Find something. But I love the way that you're comfortable enough to say that, because, you know, I've gotten a little bit of criticism about my S's, and it drives me crazy because I'm like, dude, if you can help me fix it, help me fix it.
Right.
I'm not an expert. I'm just a guy who likes to talk, and I love to talk. And so, you know, I appreciate the honesty and the, you know, the, you can laugh at yourself. And I appreciate that because I do that myself.
Don't we laugh? If we can't laugh at ourselves, oh my goodness.
Well, you have to, because I'll go upstairs and my wife will laugh at me. So it's fun. So you do some training now. So you have, you've written a couple books and you've done some training, and it really is, it seems to be, you know, where you have identified some challenges probably that you had, recognizing that others are having the same challenges, and you put them in a format that you can, I guess you sell these things. Is that how it works?
Well, it was, my training is usually, or has always been, from my experience. That's how we should train, is train from your experience. Other people can have very similar experiences, right? But, and train, and there are people who sell very similar courses or ebooks or whatever than I do, but it's always going to be a different training, because everybody comes from their own or should be coming from their own experience and challenges. And so I created books about when I was doing the thrifting all the time. It was books about thrifting and how to make the most sense for business. And I've tried a lot of things. I've tried couponing, which somebody else taught. I've tried liquidation buying, which somebody else taught. I've done retail arbitrage and online arbitrage for a long time. And the competition is just getting, it's in your face all the time. And you've got to get into a place where you have less competition, because the first thing that happens when a competitor comes onto a listing is the price gets driven down. It's the nature of this beast. And you can't be, I have better packaging, or mine will always be the perfect package or whatever, and then be able to say, I'll be able to sell mine for $20 more or $3 more or whatever than the same person on the same listing. You have to be in your own space. And Amazon gives us that at this time, they still give us that solution. And the solution for me was bundles, or in another way I've described them is MURPs, MURPs, which is matching up related products.
Mm. But you're private labeling. I mean, Andy Slamons, who runs Private Label, is always saying that, man, if you want a private label, you don't have to go to China or India or anything like that. Create unique bundles. And I think you're like the bundle master. I think you have a nickname as Bundle Master or something. I've heard that. I think they're like, Deborah Conrad, Bundle Master.
The queen of bundles.
Queen
of
bundles.
I just have found that for the most part now, some of my bundles have had competition, and that's always a questionable thing, but it's not all the time. And so the process of creating bundles and getting out of the way of all that competition and nearly having your own brand, or eventually having your own brand of products, is really kind of the future of Amazon. And certainly I'm going into away from arbitrage for those things and more into wholesale now. That's the direction that if you've been listening to the more recent podcast, that I'm going into wholesale more. I've done some, but it's definitely much more of a focus now. But there's a frustration to that, and which a lot of people find in going into wholesale, is that you got to then start digging for things that aren't just easy to find.
It's right.
Like everything else, then you got to start digging. You know, just because you say you're going into wholesale does not mean that your job is done.
So are you using this wholesaling for bundling? I mean, is that what you're saying? Is that basically, look, Steve, I can go and buy, you know, blenders. I'll make it up, right? And I want to sell blenders, but everybody can sell blenders. So I'm selling blenders with, I'm bad at this, you know.
A cup.
Mixes.
A cup.
And
or a
cup.
It's
matches.
It's a blender for juicing, and I'm selling the juicing cups or whatever, right?
Right, and the measuring things that go along with it, and the spoons and the straws and all that. Right, so that's your strategy, is to really say, you know, I love bundling. I want my private label, which to me, I think that is the best way to describe it. You are creating a unique product. It is yours, and you don't have to worry about somebody claiming infringement. Right, because you're not infringing. You're buying existing products, so you don't, and you're not diluting that. But you're, instead of sourcing it at, you know, Target or wherever, you're sourcing it wholesale. And
that's the idea. That's the direction that we are headed. We've done a lot that was retail and online arbitrage and that kind of thing. And I've done some suppliers, what you would consider suppliers, and some from wholesale. And the wholesale, for longevity, I can see that wholesale is a much better way to go for me, because when I spend the time to create the best listing with the best images, I want that product to be available to me at the same price when I wanted to order it. Mm. I don't, when you do retail arbitrage or online arbitrage, a lot of times that product might be available, but it might be $10 more today than it was last week. And then what do you got to do? You got to find discount cards, and you got to do this, and you got to do a lot more. I'm trying to simplify as much as I can so that I can expand.
Mm. But that art background, again, I keep thinking about your eye for that stuff. I think that that's such a great trait for somebody who can see a bundle. You see something that I just can't see, especially as a man. I look at it and I'm like, what else would go with that? Well, guys, you know, we'll drink out of whatever, right? We're not, where you could say, no, this would be, you know, these all things complement each other. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's such a skill, a great trait to bring to this. And so you have a bundle basics and advanced strategy. You have that's one of the courses that you offer?
Right. That is the where you start. Really. Okay. And then I also have a, we've been calling it a mastermind, but you and I were discussing that it's really it's a group of people to get together. And yes, I'm the leader, and yes, there's training, but to have everybody network about everything that they're trying to do is where the magic happens.
You want a safe place where you can ask a question without being put down, mm-hmm. because, you know, I mean, you're not the only, at least in my experience, every time I ask a question, there are like two other people who are like, man, I'm glad you asked that, because I was thinking the same thing. And you all feel stupid for asking mm-hmm. it, but yet you all had the same question. So that means that you want something more. Right. And that is networking.
Or you don't know how to ask it. Mm, I know there's this thing in my head that's rumbling around, but I can't get it out into words. And if I can't get it out into words, I can't ask the question. And there, boom, it is. Somebody else has asked it, and you're like, thank goodness somebody could articulate what I just couldn't get out. So,
well, I love the way you've evolved, though, in your business, and because you were successful all the way along. You're finding out, well, I mean, I look at your sales. I mean, I've seen your sales numbers. You've done well. I mean, you can't sell yourself short. I know you're not the $10 million sellers and all that jazz, and neither am I. But I give you credit. I mean, I give you credit, and I give you credit for sticking with it. I guess that's one of those traits that we've already identified for you. And so I just think it's cool, though, that you've kind of come full circle. You still have the art that you like, right? Mm-hmm. This thing that your father was proud of. Right. You still have that still back here. And now you figured out that you can create something that you want, that art, right? Right. That bundle is an art,
it
really,
is.
When
it
you
is.
Think about it. It really is.
It does take creativity. People are not everybody can do everything the same. And that's what makes us all different. And there are people who get it and people who just don't get it. And that's the people that have to move on to training, like for shoes, because then you'll get it. I don't want to learn how to sell shoes. Not my thing. And so, but I know
there's nothing wrong with that, right?
I certainly do know. I ran a shoe department for 5 years. I do know shoes and don't really. I see.
You've identified that's not your why.
Not my why. That's absolutely not my why. Yeah.
So somebody could come in, try this, and realize pretty quickly that, hey, this isn't for me. And not everybody is creative, and not everybody can do that. I love that, too, because I think that's the other thing a lot of sellers do is they see you're doing this. Oh, God, I got to do bundles. Oh, my God, I got to get on that. And then they go and they struggle, and they give up what they were really doing well at, and it's comes at a cost, and then they realize, wait, I really don't like this. I hate this thing, whatever.
It's a definite shiny object thing that you have to I'm guilty. I am guilty of I love learning about. If somebody's doing something successfully, I want to learn how they do it. I want to be successful. But you have to learn to turn off a lot of the noise and follow just a few people. And if it's me and you're learning about bundles, then don't go all over the place and say, I just saw this about shoes. I got to go and do that too. Just if you want to learn how to do bundles, get into it and learn it and struggle with the learning process and get good at it and grab every nugget you can from the people who know what works and doesn't work and get moving on that. But the noise will ruin people's businesses, will just ruin people's businesses because they're trying shoes and they're trying toys and they're trying jewelry and they're trying bundles and they're trying way too many things. And I love it that we all like to try all these things and that's how we learn. But when you're in that place where you've got to make it work, that's a very hard time to be trying everything. It's very tough.
Well, none of them work well, right? So you're trying them all and you're giving them all 10% and you're not going to get the effort.
You're not going to get
the reward is not going to get.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. All right. Very cool. Very cool. And again, I love the focus. And I think that that's just so cool that you've come to this through all the trials and tribulations. This is where you've come back to. And I can see it. And I can see this being, you know, were you one of those people that could create those amazing retail displays? I always look in a store and I'm always like, man, how did somebody think of that?
I love that. I would love to be able to do that as a job if I had to go back
that's
to
an art.
A job.
I mean, that's truly that. Art. Yeah. When you sit there and you think to yourself, my God, I couldn't do that. I'd be like throwing this on and it's close enough or whatever. But and then you go and you see this and you're like, oh, my God, somebody is really talented. So I think you've come full circle. All right. Well, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? So they're stuck and they're trying to get past that point of stuck. They're 20,000 or maybe 30,000 a month and they just can't get past it. Can you give us a tip or trick that you would suggest that somebody could do tomorrow to help move their business forward?
Wow. I have several. One of them, and I'm not sure, probably other people have said this before, and this is not for everyone, but hiring out is really, even when you think you can't afford it, your time is so valuable and so limited, so finite. And the first person I hired years ago didn't have anything to do with business. It's a girl thing. It's a woman thing, right? It's a housekeeper because it will drive us crazy if our bathrooms aren't clean. You know,
I get it.
So it will make you, a woman will make you nuts if your kitchen isn't clean at least once a week or so and your bathrooms aren't cleaned up. And it can, I hear people say, I got to stop everything and, you know, really dig in and clean out my house. And my gal comes, she's down to where she only comes, because there's just two of us now, she only comes twice a month and she spends 3 hours and what would take me at least an entire day, if not two or three, because I would get distracted. She's tightly focused on, and everything just sparkles and smells good. And so it's one of those things. things. And then one of the next things for my business, I hired, of course, I have a CPA, but I needed somebody that was a bookkeeper. Or you can also call her, she's a bookkeeper. So she just does data entry, essentially. It's data entry. And it's all that stuff that you are sitting in piles that needs to be captured in something so that you can do your taxes. And that there are online solutions. There are people that do that online. I have an in-house bookkeeper, and so she comes once a month and she just does all the data entry and balances the checkbooks and makes sure all the bills are paid, and I don't have to think about it. I just have to. The good thing is that right before she comes, I get her all the data that I know that she isn't going to easily have access to. So that makes me do what I need to do once a month. So it's kind of a timely thing.
And how many hours is she there doing that for you?
She comes once a month, and she's usually here about 8 hours. But we have two businesses, and she also does all of our personal bookkeeping too. But
it's so smart. So you're saying, hey, it forces you to get organized, right?
Because
you have to be prepared for it.
It keeps you organized. You're organized all year, and your quarterly taxes are paid. Your sales taxes are up to date. Everything's up to date. Everything is spot on, and you know your numbers. Because that person is doing that, you know your numbers, and you can spot problems and that kind of thing. And I say that it takes a while. You know, people are often hesitant because they think it's going to take a while to train somebody. Well, then find somebody that's already doing it online, which Charlene has. She just gets her the data that she needs to have, and it's all online. And that person knows what they need. They'll give you a list of what they need, and you don't have to think anymore. So, and then
great advice.
Recently, I hired somebody that is, lack of a better word, is they continuously review my Amazon account for all kinds of seller support issues and inventory issues and getting me my money back for refunds that were never, you know, that were given and the item was never returned, all those kinds of things, lost inventory. She's paid me back enough to pay her for 4 more months.
That's awesome.
So and I say, for somebody like that, people are hesitant for that, and there's lots of tools that are coming out and that kind of thing. So get something like that in place, because Amazon's the worst for your money being locked up in places you have no idea that it's there. And so get yourself your money back.
Let me ask you this question, because I think these are exactly the things that people need to do. Do you like doing any of the three things that you described, the outsource? Cleaning, the heavy cleaning
I hate cleaning. I hate cleaning.
Okay, so you took something you don't like,
right.
and it's now it's
somebody
pleasant for
problem.
You, right?
That's right.
Yep, somebody else's problem.
Yep.
The minutia of bookkeeping, because that's different than accounting, mm-hmm. right? The minutia. Do you like bookkeeping?
I don't like the data entry. I like
Good. So
I like the looking at the numbers and playing with things in like Inventory Lab and seeing where my, you know, my 80-20 is working, you know, all those kinds of things. I like that, but I'm not good at math. And so having all these, and I don't like data entry. I make more mistakes data entry than it's like fat fingers, right?
I
hired somebody that is so detail oriented that it'll make your head spin, the stuff that she asked me. And it's like, why are we worrying about something that costs me $7 a month? And she's like, because it's $7 a month you don't owe. And she says, that's almost $80 a year. So,
and you would have passed right out. But I think that that's the point that you're making in all this, is that you're outsourcing the things that you just don't like. It's not that you couldn't do them. You don't like doing them. And that's so healthy, because that's why your business has not become a job in the negative sense,
right.
Generally.
And it takes you a long time to get to the point of saying that that's what you should do. But once you do it, it's it's like, why didn't I do this a long time ago? And if you feel that you can't afford to hire somebody, because I know this is, people are like, I just can't do it. Hire a family member. Give them a bribe if you can't afford money. Some kind of bribe. I'll take you out to dinner, or I'll bake you a cake, or, you know, whatever it is. And carve out a specific time that you're going to teach or work on something in your business. And that means that you have to prepare for that time. You have to create the process that it will require for you to do that. And that is extremely important. You will narrow down what it is that you are doing that is completely a waste of time. And you will become more systematic in your approach to things that somebody else can do. And if you can get to a point, I'll stand there and I'm bundling things, which I'm just putting three things in a bag and slapping it closed and putting a label on it. And it's like, oh my goodness, when am I going to hire somebody to start doing this? Because it's the most boring thing in the world. This is not using my brain for what it's the best at. But I will resist it because I know how to do it, and I know I do it faster. And yet if somebody else was to come in and do it, they probably would come up with solutions for doing it better.
Yeah, right. Because as you described the cleaning, they're not getting distracted.
Right.
They're not, you know, because they're focused. They know what they're there to do. I think that's so smart. Man, I'll tell you, that is good. And I think you put it better than most people, is the reasons that you're doing those three things. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so thriftingforprofit.com is Deborah's webpage and her podcast. Is that the best way to get in touch with you? Because I know people are going to want to reach out to you and have more questions.
Right. Thrifting for Profit Facebook group is where mostly you can find me. The podcast.
It's a free group?
Is it a free group? We just passed 19,000 members.
Wow.
Yeah, huge. And
that is huge.
I couldn't do it without my admins, that's for sure. I've got some three people that are my admins over there that just keep it clean, you know? Keep it clean and keep it positive. And that's that, because that's a big classroom. 19,000 is a big classroom, but it's all free. And I have a website called Howazon.
Howazon.
Howazon.com. That, if you're new to selling on Amazon, is a great place to start. It's like a little, you don't have to sign up for anything. It's just got a lot of things on it for really new. So if you're brand new to selling, go over there and you'll kind of see what selling on Amazon is and how it works. And so that's kind of the newbie place. And I have some free guides that you can sign up for too. Thrifting is a great, I still say that, even though I'm not thrifting that much, I don't want anybody who does thrift to think that they're low man on the totem pole, because I think that thrifting is the best place to start to sell, because because you have more time than money, and you're learning about selling all kinds of products.
And you're buying them cheap and selling them high. You're never going to make those margins doing it wholesale, retail, online.
Absolutely.
You're
not
going to make them.
But you'll learn how to sell such a variety of products, because they're available on Amazon and I can list it on Amazon. And you'll learn about, oh my goodness, I can't sell those things on Amazon. Kind of those, I bought this at the thrift store for a dollar and I just found out that it's against the rules to sell it on Amazon. Well, great way to learn that you can't sell that on Amazon is to only lose a dollar.
Yeah, great. How many $50 items do you have sitting in that corner?
Yeah,
again, that
there
corner
you go,
that
corner.
That corner. Man, I really appreciate you taking the time. You're a busy lady. You got a lot going on. But again, I love the common sense approach, the simple, you know, you're not making it complicated. As you say, you're just, you know, back to basics. And just, you know, walking people through in a positive environment. I just think that the world needs more of that. And I just really appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but success, which I know you'll have, because you're going to fight through it. There's no question. being wiser, you're not old, you're wiser. And so I really appreciate it. And I just thank you so much.
Wish you well. This was so much fun. You could tell I was a giggle girl again, as usual.
Love it, love it, love it. Take care.
All right. I knew you'd enjoy Deborah. Bundle of energy, very, very smart, very successful. I'm going to have links to her podcast. You know, I appreciate if you go out and give her a listen and see what you think. I think she brings something so different than a lot of people. And I think there's something to learn. And I just think, again, that you take a little bit from each one and eventually, you know, I'd like to describe it as a knife. It gets a little sharper every time you figure something out. That little swipe on the blade, that point gets more pointed towards something, and that's where you need to go. So, hey, thanks for listening. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.